Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. It's the day after Halloween. But nevertheless, this time of year, we tend to talk a lot about pumpkins, apples, winter squashes, and all those really American, so we think, fruits and vegetables, if you will. Actually, pumpkins and squashes are pretty American. Apples are as American as apple pie, but they're actually not native to America. Unlike this fruit that I'm going to be talking about today, I'm really excited because this is one of the coolest food histories I've read in quite a while. And it's all about a fruit called the pawpaw, which I was unfamiliar with before. And there's nothing like a good, unfamiliar food to get me all excited to learning everything about it. And that is thanks to the author of Pawpaw, the In Search of America's Forgotten Fruit. It's Andy Moore, and he's on the line now from Pittsburgh. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining, and congrats on this cool book.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
This was my favorite beach read over the summer, I gotta say.
Oh, fun. Good.
I'm like, people are reading romance novels, and I'm like, oh, Pawpaw, this is so interesting.
It's a love story in many ways as well.
Actually, it's more of a journey because it takes us on, you take us throughout your discoveries about the fruit and from a place of, like, how did you first learn or hear about pawpaw? Because I hadn't heard about it, sadly, until this book arrived in my mail.
Right. And, although the pawpaw is enjoying some level of a revival and at least a renewed interest in recent years, for the most part, most Americans are completely unaware of pawpaws, and I was no different. I had moved to Pittsburgh, this was about 6 years ago, and a friend invited me to come to this festival in Ohio. I didn't know much about it, and I was new to town, so I said, sure, I'll go to this pawpaw festival, whatever that is. And I got there, and, not really knowing what to expect, I had heard it was some sort of native fruit, and, I wasn't expecting much, to be honest. And then I got there, and, I dedicated much of the next 5-6 years to learning everything I could about the fruit.
Cool. Well, the thing is, I think I've seen pawpaws before, and they go by other names, like custard apple. What's another one?
Yeah, it's got a lot of nicknames in history. Yeah. Poor man's banana, Indiana banana.
That's not a good one.
But it's got a number of names like that. It's got a botanical name. It's known as Acimina triloba. And one thing I really like about the botanical name is that word acimina is actually taken from a Native American word for the fruit. So I like that that history and that heritage lives on in its botanical name.
Cool. Well, one thing about the fruit is that I think that maybe a lot of people might mistake it for being a tropical fruit, something really exotic. However, it grows wild and abundantly still in the United States of America, where it is native to. So to me, and it because it's so rare, and I actually tried to find one yesterday at Union Square Green Market, but I think I got there a little too late. Because it's so esoteric nowadays, and it's coming back, as you say, it has this air of something really exotic. But actually, we totally forgot this history and heritage in America that we have with pawpaws. And that's what makes this book so fascinating. You start out with a little traditional folk song that's called Way Down Yonder in the Pawpaw Patch. And that was really interesting. Could you maybe describe to us or sing the tune to see how it goes?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not a singer by any means, but the tune that most people, not most people, but some people, if you talk to them about pawpaws, they won't know the fruit, but they'll say, oh, I think I know that folk song, Way Down Yonder in the Pawpaw Patch. And it's something that school children grew up singing. There's a little game and a dance that goes along with it, and it's, you know, where oh where is little Susie, or whoever the name you choose to put in there, and then they go and find her way down yonder in the pawpaw patch.
Yeah. So this is like this fruit was very common, I guess, in not too long ago. But for this book really tracks that, you know, for various reasons, and a lot of it having to do with the associations and, you know, throughout the years it has gotten and reputations that has gotten, we no longer eat this fruit.
Yeah, it was once, you know, and it remains to this day a widespread and abundant fruit tree in the wild. It's really just that we stopped paying attention to it. You know, certainly it's harder in New York City to find these trees, but when you know the native range of this tree is 26 eastern states, so quite a large swath of land. You know, from the Atlantic Ocean all the way west to eastern Nebraska, and from the Gulf of Mexico to the Great Lakes. So it's out there, and you know, humans have a long history with it. Humans ate it as soon as they arrived in North America. You know, named towns after it. Even early Native American towns were associated with pawpaw groves and pawpaw thickets.
Yeah.
And European settlers, they encountered the fruit and ate it. And then even they started naming towns after it. So we have towns named pawpaw in Michigan, Oklahoma, Kentucky, West Virginia. And each case, they're all named for this tree because it was there and because people ate the fruit and knew it and celebrated it. And then, yeah, for various reasons, we let it go, which is where we are today.
Let's talk about one of those reasons. I was really impressed and really enlightened by the foreword by Michael Twitty, a food historian who writes at AfroCulinaria.com. And, you know, he was alluding to how it had become associated with poor people. You know, it was called poor man's banana, that it kind of just lost out of... You know, went out of fashion. It went out of vogue. It just grew negative connotations. How much do you think that weighs into the decline of pawpaw's popularity?
You know, I'm not so sure that it was as negatively associated as something like in Appalachia, you know, with ramps, you know, something that is kind of stinky and, you know, was certainly the poor man's food, and, you know, was something that people would go to and count on for sustenance in early spring. The pawpaw was more of a treat, and it was something that people relished, and to get it was joyful, and it's a very sweet fruit, so you wouldn't eat too much of it, and so I think when people would get it, it was a special thing, and it was savored, and you know, I think a lot of the poor man's banana, those kind of connotations, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it was wild. It was something that was outside of commerce for the most part.
Forage for it, yeah.
Yeah, you would just go to the woods and gather it. And so it was, you know, outside of traditional commerce and market economies, which is one reason why it fell out of favor, was that when our food system started to change dramatically in the last century, and when, you know, our food became, you know, industrial and homogenized, we lost a lot of diversity, clearly, and I know that's something you talk about on your show a lot, but things like pawpaw that didn't have a place in commerce, these were things that you just had to go in the wild and get it, and when we stopped going and looking for it, much like when we stopped harvesting rams and other things, it was just totally forgotten, and there was no one... There was no orchard, you know, to sell it at supermarkets, for example. And so if there was no access to it, of course you couldn't know a thing and you couldn't eat a thing if it wasn't brought to your your giant supermarket chain.
I smell a book about ramps next, by the way.
Yeah, you smell it. That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. Well, that too, actually, this time of year, after reading this book, I'm finding so many things, you know, falling from the ground in fall and from trees, and they're starting to have this pungent odor from fermenting on the ground, and I'm like, what is that? Like, what are these things? Are they potentially foods
I should be
looking into more? It's really just, it's really fascinating. And, you know, also, another kind of reason for its decline that you talk about is, or it has to do with a certain individual named John Chapman, or better known as Johnny Appleseed.
Sure.
He he went through the Pawpaw region, the Pawpaw Belt, as we know. He was like a sort of traveling apple salesman, and just started saying, hey, apples, try these instead.
Right, right. And, you know, that's something I found fascinating when I was researching and studying maps and looking at things. The country that Johnny Appleseed ventured into was prime pawpaw habitat, and to this day remains places where pawpaws are not only abundant, but you find really good, large, favorable-tasting pawpaws. It's really kind of interesting that was the land he went through and planted his seedling apple orchard.
Do you think he had something against pawpaws? He was, like, on a mission to destroy them?
No, I actually speculate that Johnny Pawpawseed, or, excuse me, Johnny Appleseed, was a fan of pawpaws.
Okay.
He was a great naturalist. He knew, you know, the medicinal plants of the old world and the new. And I'm certain that he looked forward to pawpaw season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was planting his apples, and that crop was primarily used for cider. But I'm fairly certain that each year Johnny Appleseed was eating pawpaws with the rest of the folks in Ohio and Indiana.
So he was carrying the exotic fruit back then.
That's right. Yeah.
and then the tides have changed. Actually, you just mentioned cider, and I'm wondering why there hasn't been so much wine or cider made from pawpaws to help kind of promote its.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, again, in my research, I found that pawpaw liquor and booze of any kind was, in fact, a thing.
Mm-hmm. Moonshine from pawpaw?
Yeah, absolutely. Frontier times, you know, pawpaw moonshine. Pawpaw brandy is how it's often referred to.
Okay.
You know, just like a fruit wine. Pawpaw beer in the Appalachian Mountains. You know, there's lots of citations of folks brewing and making it and drinking it, and it's a high liquor content. It's a lot of sugars and a lot of alcohol is produced from pawpaws. And we're returning to it. I mentioned earlier the Ohio Pawpaw Festival that I went to, and it's in its 17th year. And this past year, in September, there were over 11 breweries from Ohio that had pawpaw beer.
Wow.
Yeah, and so, like you said, you know, it's beer and wine is a great way to introduce folks to pawpaw, not necessarily the flavor, but even just the idea of it, that, hey, there's this fruit out there that we can use that's delicious, that has a good story. And so, you know, they brew these pawpaw beers and in some cases wine, and they put, you know, really neat labels on the bottles that have pictures of the pawpaw. And it's a really great talking point to get people to talk about it and start paying attention
to it.
That's
absolutely right. It is a great story. I'm curious because, you know, there are some really cool craft breweries that are making, you mentioned the full pint, you know, pawpaw Berliner Weiss and really cool stuff, but are they, you know, beer that is flavored with pawpaws, or can you make like a cider of its own or beer of its own just from pawpaws?
Yeah, so like more of an old time style, just fermented pawpaws. Mm-hmm. What you'll get in most cases is a wine in that case.
Mm-hmm.
There's some folks who are doing pawpaw meads, so they're adding honeys.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, it'll have a fruitier profile. It'll be more wine-like.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the beers that folks are doing, you know, they've been experimenting with it, and what they're doing is a lot of times you'll add pawpaw pulp
to
the secondary fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
So that more of the flavor profile is present in the beer itself because it's cooked less. And being added to that secondary fermentation allows the flavor to translate a little bit more.
Mm, that sounds like a great way to deal with it, and certainly more refreshing than all the pumpkin beers that we've been seeing.
Yeah,
maybe everyone just got totally sick of pumpkin beers and needed a new story, new
fruit.
Yeah,
here's another one we could do,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. So much more to talk about. We're going to cut to a quick little commercial interlude and be right back.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
If I had a magic wand, tomorrow everyone in the world would have enough food to eat that was culturally appropriate and delicious. The planet would be thriving because all the food would have been grown and produced in a way that sustains us, both our bodies and our world. But man, I do not have a magic wand. What I do have is you and this radio station, the Heritage Radio Network. That's what we're here to do. We're here to help lead the way to a future that's more delicious, that's more fun, where we're healthier, where the planet's healthier, and we want you to be a part of that. We can't do it without you. As a nonprofit radio station, we depend on the support of our listeners. So take a minute out of your day, visit the website, and click the big beating donate tab. Throw us a few bucks. Every bit helps. We're counting on you.
All right. Thanks, Liz, for that groovy little commercial break. We're back chatting with Andy Moore of Pawpaw in Search of America's Forgotten Fruit. Andy, you still with us?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Awesome. So I realized we didn't really talk too much about the actual flavor and characteristics of this fruit, which is not intuitive, I guess, for anyone who hasn't had it.
We should definitely discuss that. I mean,
okay.
if we're saying the fruit is unknown and uncommon, we should describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I like to say about a pawpaw is so it looks
like a
green mango in a tree. It's this often kidney-shaped or ovoid-shaped round fruit.
Kind of avocado-shaped or no? Yeah. A little bit like an avocado, right?
Yeah, in some ways. And then when you cut the fruit open, it has this bright yellow to orange pulp that is totally unexpected if you pull it from the woods in the Midwest, say, that is far from the tropics. And right away, the tropical similarities are apparent. And then it has this texture that is custard-like.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned custard fruit earlier in our conversation, and that's a totally appropriate and accurate way to describe it. It's actually in a plant family called the custard apple family.
Okay.
And it has this flavor that it's often described as a cross between a banana and a mango.
Mm.
And what folks are saying when they describe it that way is that it has tropical flavors and a custardy, creamy texture.
It does. And it looks like you can eat it. You can, like, just cut it open. I see there's a photo of you eating it, sort of, in your biopic.
And what I like to do is grab a spoon and just eat it out of the skin like it's a cup, like it's custard in a cup. That's what I like to do.
Or like an avocado, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very unique For sure. And it sounds like something that doesn't necessarily keep well, like, you know, after harvesting, you know, like apples and butternut squash, for instance, can keep pretty well in cold storage. But these guys, you know, with their soft flesh, the skins turn black, and that's when they're ripe, I think. But they bruise easily, right?
That's right, yeah. And you know, the skin can blacken, but you definitely don't wait for that to happen to eat it. You can. And some of the old-timers I talked to in my research would only eat it after it had kind of shriveled and started to smell a little fermented.
That was the flavor profile
that they were attracted to. But you can certainly eat a ripe pawpaw when it's still firmer, and it's still green on the outside, actually.
I see.
But you won't mistake a ripe pawpaw and an unripe pawpaw. If it's unripe, it's rock hard, and you can barely cut it.
Mm.
And so when it's ripe, it starts to give to pressure, and it has this floral aroma that really lets itself be known that it's time to eat me.
Mm-hmm.
So sounds great. You won't mistake it that way. But, you know, you mentioned, storage and
keep.
And we were talking about Johnny Appleseed. You know, that fruit, the apple, is something you can build a homestead around. You know, you can do so much with it. You can make alcohol with it. You can store it in a cold cellar. You can cook with it. You can bake with it. And the pawpaw is more of it's the spice of life, is what I like to say. You know, you're not necessarily going to feed your family for many months of the year on a pawpaw.
Yeah.
But it's what makes life fun. You know, it's a treat. It's a dessert. It's a flavor that's certainly unlike anything else you can grow in temperate North America. And so it's more of like I said, it's the spice of life. It's something fun and unusual.
It looks perfect for a smoothie, like with not anything else, just like mashed up.
Mashed up, certainly. I've made some pawpaw smoothies in my day, and you're right, it's totally appropriate to that. The other thing that I really like to do with a pawpaw is to utilize that custardy texture and make an ice cream or a gelato. Mm. And that's something folks are starting to do in different parts of the country, is they're making that.
Yeah, I saw, like, Jenny's ice cream, Splendid Ice Cream, and a few others were making it. We talked a bit about the sad, sad decline and neglect of the pawpaw, and then, you know, its heyday times, and now it sounds like there's definitely this resurgence of pawpaw, you know, fanaticism amongst, crafty gardeners. Of course, these artisanal food makers and brewers, but who is leading this? Who are these pawpaw, you know, historians, aside from yourself, I guess, that have been, leading this charge, and why?
Yeah, much of us pawpaw people have a similar story. You're introduced to the fruit, whether it's on your own, hiking in the woods, or whether it's, you know, someone introduces it to you at a garden club or something, and folks are just captivated by it. It's really special. It's the largest edible fruit native to the U.S. It's got this custardy tropical flavor, and most people haven't heard of it. So what happens is people are, you mentioned it, fanaticism. People get really interested in it because of that story. You know, it's this unique thing that most people haven't heard of. And for folks who have a background in horticulture or even plant science and breeding, it's such an attractive pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
It's this large, diverse wild fruit that hasn't really been domesticated. And so the opportunities are incredible. I mean, how often do you get, you know, a large tree fruit that's native to your climate that you could start to experiment with?
Yeah.
And so there have been some plant folks, really only a handful over the past century, who have kept the flame alive and who have been working with it and breeding it, or even just selecting wonderful wild selections and keeping those genetics alive, much the way you would any other heirloom crop. And so we owe so much to those handful of folks who have been working with it and for keeping that material around. I profiled these folks in my book.
Yeah, and there's actually a Johnny Pawpaw seed.
Yeah, that's what we're calling a gentleman by the name of Neil Peterson. He was introduced to the fruit as a young man in the 70s, and he had a background in plant science and genetics, and so he went on this wonderful pursuit to find the best pawpaws that were selected in the 100 years before he was introduced to the fruit, and did a breeding experiment. He planted a diverse selection of pawpaws in several orchards and selected fruit out of that was the best, whether it's large or just a wonderful flavor, or trees that produced a lot of fruit. And thanks to his work, decades of work, we now have a handful of pawpaws.
Wow.
That he has named and released, cultivars that are among the best folks have ever seen.
Wow.
Just really great pawpaws.
And we'll probably be starting to see a lot more chefs experiment with pawpaws as well. Is that something you've seen?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Folks, you know, this is a great moment for food and chefs in America. And when something like pawpaw comes along, they're certainly eager to figure it out.
Of course,
and figure
yeah.
out what works well for the pawpaw. So I'm seeing it with chefs from Louisville, Kentucky to New York, where I am in Pittsburgh, D.C. Folks are getting their hands on these pawpaws by some means, whether it's wild harvest or through actual farmers who are growing pawpaws and creating dishes with it. Yeah, it's really neat to see.
That's really exciting. I can't wait until I see like a pawpaw puree underneath this beautifully broiled fillet of fish or something
right,
like that.
Right,
it sounds
yeah.
great. I wish I could find more pawpaws, though. But you have an extensive little index here of where to find pawpaws and nurseries for pawpaws, which is very helpful.
Yeah, that was something I was really happy to put together, a list of nurseries that offer pawpaws and even descriptions
specialty.
Of different cultivars of pawpaws. Yeah, so I hope that's a good starting point for folks.
I can't wait, and I can't wait to see it, show up in more places, hopefully, thanks to all the love pawpaw is getting. And, there's something kind of cool about how, as much as we've neglected this plant, it will not go away. I think that's a great ending,
Yes, it with us or without us, the pawpaw has been here hundreds of thousands of years before us, and it'll probably be here long after... we're through with our communities. Hopefully that's not a fun note to end on. But no, the pawpaw, it'll be here. It's been there.
Mm-hmm.
And, whether we pay attention to it or not, it's going to be there.
Or identify or the different varieties of it or figure out how to grow it better to our liking and so forth. Like we've done with so many different crops, this one is still kicking, so...
That's right.
That's saying something for a quintessentially American food, if you will.
Yeah. I've not thought about it that way, but I like that a lot. That's great.
So I guess we're almost about out of time here, but last but not least, what is your favorite application for a pawpaw, like, this time of year? So, I don't know, Thanksgiving's coming up, something like that. I don't know. Is
well, for better or worse, the pawpaws are done in my part of the country and most of the country. Mm. They're often done by the 1st of October.
Oh.
So now they're just a pleasant memory of late summer. But I was lucky enough to get some frozen pawpaw pulp, so I have it in my freezer.
Nice.
And what I'll likely do is maybe around Thanksgiving make a very simple pawpaw pudding or a pawpaw ice cream with
ooh,
that puree.
For a dessert. That
yes,
sounds delightful. Yeah. Those flavors of the banana and the mango with custard sounds perfect, so I can't wait to try it.
Oh, well, good. I hope you get your hands on some pawpaws really soon.
Well, you should send us some.
Yeah, I should.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Andy. It was really a pleasure, and congrats on this really great book.
Thank you so
Can't
much,
wait to
and
tell
I appreciate
more
you taking the time to talk to me about it.
Absolutely. Can't wait to tell more people. All right, and that's about all the time for today. Thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Oh, I like the way you do. Whoa, the way you took it so
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.